Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Forearm direct to the neck, that's high degree of danger.
Finn Russell has got a red card.
Hastings! They're gonna do it, are they? Van der Merwe! Yes!
Hello and welcome back to the Thistle Scottish Rugby Podcast. The Six Nations is done and Scotland managed to finish fourth despite winning away from home against England and France and then absolutely drubbing Italy. We're going to be looking back across the whole tournament, a little bit of a state of the nation, as well as looking ahead to the European rugby coming up this weekend for Glasgow and Edinburgh. And of course, the start of the Women's Six Nations. It is an absolutely bumper show. And joined as ever by Big Al and Matt. Big Al, how you doing?
Yeah, I'm all right. Looking forward to the Easter weekend. I don't know where I'm going with this.
have you, Alan, recovered since your the drubbing that you took on social media today?
Yeah, getting absolutely wrecked online. A couple of like haters coming at me.
What were they saying? So you start every answer with potentially.
Yeah, I suppose they use the phrase potentially when making like quite definitive points, which is fair. It's a fair criticism. And then when I'm agreeing with you, I start all of them my kind of sentences with the word no, which obviously
yeah, we all know that.
That is true. That's become a recurring theme of this podcast.
Yeah, and to be fair, I think the potentially has been raised like at work by people before where I go, potentially, you are completely wrong.
I think it's quite good. Like that. You're just like always leaving yourself that wiggle room to be like, yeah. Look, I didn't commit to that. I said potentially.
Yeah.
I said potentially we could have a scout in Japan. Didn't think you'd actually go and do it, you know, SRU. What the hell are you talking about? Well, and obviously Matt's there just sort of catching us up on all the social media abuse that Alan has been taking. And that is social media abuse that you can find on our Twitter at Thistle Rugby Pod. Or if you want to abuse us on Instagram, that's Thistle_Rugby_Pod. If you prefer a long form of abuse, that is on the emails, thistlerugby@gmail.com. And then obviously you can sign up to our newsletter as well, which comes out every week. That's on Substack, Thistle Scottish Rugby Podcast. Sign up for that. We had a record week of subscribers this week. So thank you very much for everyone who's subscribing to that. And we will be in your inbox every week. And one final piece of housekeeping from us before we get into all the rugby action is something we've been doing throughout the Six Nations as a way for you guys to show a little bit of support if you want to. For the pod, you can buy us a coffee. It's buymeacoffee.com/thistle. And you can leave us a few quid towards a pint of Tennent's or a bottle of WKD when we do finally unlock and we can all meet in Fingers. Thank you very much this week to at the Embra Express, who sent us a little bit of money, and he said, by my calculations, this should get us, get the three of you plus one significant other, a WKD blue each to enjoy outside your local Tesco's. I can think of no better way of thanking you for your consistently high quality content. So thank you very much, the Ember Express. We will be meeting, I think, maybe the Tesco's Metro at the top of Leith Walk, you know, sort of opposite the Omni Centre. That could be quite a nice venue for a few WKDs when we're allowed to meet up, guys. What do you think?
It's a good Tesco, that.
Yeah, well, that's where we're going to be. Anyone is, of course, invited. So thank you very much, obviously, for all of your support throughout the Six Nations. That is the admin side of the pod done. So you can stop hitting the 15-second skip button. Now we're getting right into the news. Let's start with Edinburgh re-signing Henry Purgos and Charlie Sheil, sort of finalizing their scrum half lineup for next year with Ben Vellacott coming in. Alan, what do you make of those two re-signings for Edinburgh?
Fine. I think Charlie Shields probably not kicked on as much as we'd hoped this year. And obviously Purgos, we all know what he can do, but I think his sort of performances have definitely sort of peaked a couple of years ago. It'd be interesting next year with Purgos, Sheil and Vellacott, because it's kind of in a similar vein to potentially sort of the Glasgow 10 situation. It's not really clear which one's going to be first choice.
It's interesting because it's a position that has probably been like one of a bit of weakness at Edinburgh in the last couple of years. I'd say you'd probably say that about the halfbacks in general. And when Nick Groom came along, probably in quite a similar way to Simon Hickey, kind of thought, right, well, this is a guy who's presumably on a decent amount of money, he's experienced, sort of, you know, both Super Rugby and Northern Hemisphere Premiership Rugby as well. Like, he's going to be the guy that makes Edinburgh's attack really click. And for whatever reason, it hasn't really worked. I slightly worry about, I think Ben Vellacott is a really exciting player in the same way that Charlie Sheil could be. I just do worry about how their style of play fits in with Edinburgh's overall game plan. And probably Purgos does suit their game plan better, but he's a capable player, but he is limited and he's getting older, right?
Surely part of the rationale is that Vellacott's going to come in. The Scotland setup have clearly got an eye on him. So maybe they're thinking Vellacott comes in as the de facto number one with a sort of a rotation of Sheil and Purgos as the sort of the options who can also, it's unlikely that Sheil and Purgos will be involved with Scotland. So, you know,
Sheil's been brought into a few camps.
True.
To be fair, probably more than Vellacott, actually.
Well, Vellacott's never been in.
Has anyway? Has, yeah, exactly. Hasn't just England.
Yeah, there was the one time that it was rumored that Vellacott had kind of agreed to Scotland, but then Eddie Jones made that phone call and said that he was interested in coming, and they called up Nathan Fowles.
Yeah,
and Nathan Fowles was the only person out of alphabetical order in the Scotland team sheet because it was so last minute.
That was a great day.
That was a great day. To think Nathan Fowles got a Scotland call up, that is wild to say the least.
I was going to say, do you see Munster were pretty close to signing Peter Steph to Toy, but they didn't.
I did see that. Yeah,
they didn't. Oh, really? They didn't complete it, and they said supposedly a private individual had offered to pay €600,000. For to pay his salary, so what, $500,000? I was like, I genuinely think Pierre Steffetoy, Glasgow, that he would be the best man ever for Glasgow. There's got to be like Tom Farmer or Brian Suter. There's got to be some, like, they found a rich lad to pay for Ross Forward back in the day. Like
Aberdeen Asset Management.
Aberdeen Asset Management. No wonder the share price has been bombing. They spent 300 grand on Ross Forward. We got 500 grand from Peter Steph to Toy. Where's the money?
explaining the ROI on Ross Ford to the investors. Like, what the hell's gone on here?
Standard Life, like looking at like potential risks on the merger. They're like, oh god, the Ross Ford debt.
Well, we will wait with bated breath to see how Edinburgh's scrum halves gel next year. But it looks like the squads are shaking down for how they're going to look into the next campaign. Other bit of news to cover off before we get into the Six Nations review. So look forward to some more fantastic rugby coming up. The Women's Six Nations kicks off this week. Scotland have got England first up. England have been pretty dominant in this tournament for a long, long time. But Matt, what do you think Scotland? What can we expect from Scotland in this tournament? I think their last outing was a fantastic draw versus France. So, you know, what can we expect from the side?
Yeah, I think it's a mix of those established names that we've come to be quite familiar with. So you've got Rachel Malcolm as sort of the captain of the side, and then you've got experience throughout like Helen Nelson, Hannah Smith, Lisa Thompson, Lana Skeldon, for instance, like Chloe Rowley, like really good players who probably would be pushing, you know, to get into an England or a France team. Then I think at the same time, Gary Heatley, friend of the pod, wrote a really good piece on Talking Rugby Union that sort of did a deep dive into some of the new names that are all really interesting. They kind of come from, so names that he mentioned were, got Evie Gallagher from Stirling County, Evie Wills, who's also from Stirling County, then Shona Campbell, Edinburgh Uni, and Saracen Centre, Corian Grant, who are all sort of less experienced players, but sound really exciting. The thing I like about when you look at these sort of newcomers is it's probably quite different to newcomers into the Scotland squad, where there's quite a set path. Whereas with the women's side, you've got players who sort of come from universities, from more sort of Scottish club game as well, rather than like the academy system, for instance. So I think that with a base of those experienced people and some of the newcomers, although England away is, you know, extremely difficult, not insurmountable as maybe France showed, extremely difficult. Like, I think there seems a pretty good buzz around the camp.
And then in terms of formats, so we're going to play England away this week, and then in 2 weeks' time, they've got Italy at home. And then they'll play whoever is their respective opposite team in the other pool.
Yeah, so it's like a pool system. So there's, yeah, England, Italy and Scotland in Pool A, and then Pool B is France, Ireland and Wales. I mean, it's interesting that the first game against England has been played in Doncaster rather than the Twickenham Stoop, where I think they normally play, which maybe works in Scotland's favour. It's like less of a daunting venue, I suppose, somewhere where they're sort of, you know, they've maybe gone to the Twickenham Stoop a lot of times and played through a lot of losses, or maybe expected to lose. So I think that adds another interesting dynamic to things.
It'd be interesting, I guess, from a women's rugby perspective. Obviously, a lot of the sort of big names now play down in England. I wonder if, you know, obviously potentially COVID takes a hit to this, whether Scotland would ever enter a team in the sort of Premier 15s.
Mm.
Feels like that would be a sort of natural step in terms of trying to get, I guess, either an Edinburgh or a Glasgow, not full-time team, but some form of sort of semi-pro team to line up in that sort of league. Well, we can chat about, maybe that could be the third pro
next
team.
Yeah, exactly.
maybe we've been talking about the third pro team all wrong. It's actually going to be a women's team.
Yeah.
Well, very exciting, and we will be following that throughout the tournament and keeping up to speed with the women's game. So lots and lots of stuff to look forward to. But for now, we are going to look back at the campaign that was obviously a fantastic last gasp win for Scotland in Paris last Friday night. The 85th minute, Duhan van der Merwe crossing for his second try of the game and to give Scotland their third win of the campaign. Matt, three wins, breaking hoodoos like they're going out of fashion First win in England since 84. First win in Paris since 99. What can Scotland take away from this tournament? Because at the end of the day, they still finished fourth.
Yeah, I agree. And that obviously that's the outcome. Maybe that doesn't look great on paper. And, you know, it doesn't feel that long ago that post-Ireland, where the performance and result was so deflating that we were sort of looking at this Six Nations as a bit of a lost cause. But then when you take a step back and maybe it's sort of basking in the light of that France win, you know, we were 4 points off beating Ireland. We were a red card away from beating Wales, arguably quite comfortably. Italy was a professional job, obviously. And then you've got breaking these records against England and France, and doing so through with like really amazing performances. They weren't sort of fluky games that we won in a kick fest or anything. Maybe it's just the French game that sort of, I don't know, it improved the mood somewhat. But I think on a lot of levels, we should be pretty happy with the outcome in the end.
Alan, is this the start of the Roaring Twenties that we've been waiting for?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. It's a sort of, I guess, nuanced view that whilst it was a really good performance, at the same time, it does feel like that missed opportunity. You know, ultimately, you know, forgetting Grand Slams for a second, obviously, I think Scott Cummins scores that try at the end of the Wales game, and you know, could argue we'd have won the Six Nations, because I think that puts you sort of three scores ahead, and you sort of take it from there. I think it's hard to argue that we missed out on sort of a Grand Slam, because I think when you actually look back on the Ireland game, I think it's hard to argue that we deserve to really win that game. I think that 3-point loss actually paints kind of the Scotland performance in a much better light than it actually was. But no, I mean, look, as I said, I think ultimately what we've got to be happy with is, you know, even up to the point, even close to when we sort of, maybe not when we started this pod, but up until about 2014, 2015, there was ultimately four really, really good teams. There was one okay team, which is Scotland, then there was Italy. And I think now we have kind of properly bridged that gap, and there is ultimately sort of five teams that feel like on their day can all beat one another. And I think it's good, you know, probably for the first time in our lives that we can remember anyway, that we've really sort of had that situation.
Yeah, absolutely. And we put it out on Twitter, that's at Thistle Rugby Pod, asking for your three-word reviews of the tournament, and you've not let us down. Andy White, so very nearly. True Scotsman, Jammy Welsh Reds, which I quite enjoyed. David McIntosh, huge missed opportunity. And Colin Finlayson, potential yet again. We also asked for your player of the tournament, and it was pretty unanimous. We did a poll that had over 3,000 votes, and with 72%, Hamish Watson was the Thistle listeners' player of the tournament. Matt, we've talked an awful lot about Hamish Watson. I mean, over the last 3 years, where he's been, you know, putting in amazing performances for Scotland and Edinburgh. This seems to be the tournament where he's sort of broken through into, I guess, international recognition.
Yeah, I think he was always on the cusp of being that world-class player. And probably as Scotland fans, we all thought that he was already at that level. But it is great to see him get that recognition, nominated for player of the tournament, for instance. I think the impressive thing, though, is even in the Ireland and maybe the second half of the Wales game where Scotland were playing poorly, he was a guy that really stood out. And also against France, at times when Scotland were maybe faltering, he seemed to be the guy who takes the game by the scruff of the neck, leads by example, and just seems so sort of cussed and stubborn in the way that he plays. And it just takes one of those big carries to seemingly lift the rest of the team. And I think it's really impressive how he's done that. And I think even against, you know, the more physical teams like France and England, because there is this slight sense, people say he's maybe a bit too small. Like, he seems to absolutely relish that. And particularly against France, I felt that he was running at the bigger guys and just bouncing off them, running through and making yards every single time. And it was just, it was class to see.
Do you think there's an argument to suggest that he was the weakest of the three back rows in the France game? Or do you, the reason I argue that is I think for the France game was Jamie Rich's strongest game of the Six Nations by quite a considerable margin. I think, you know, both in terms of the stats, you know, he was one of the top tacklers, a couple of turnovers, etc. I think he had a real sort of impactful performance. Nick Haining is the best number eight in the world. Everyone was going on about Watson's sort of meters made, but Haining was really, by far, out of all the players on the pitch, made the most yards. He was under the high balls. He was fantastic. He was getting himself around the park. And we sort of talked about this in the Ireland game. Nick Haining feels to me like the sort of guy who appears to have these like 40-minute like world class stints. The first half against Ireland, he was unbelievable. And for about 45, 50 minutes of this match, he was absolutely class.
Insane. If the Lions just picked tomorrow, Nick Haining and Dave Cherry are on the plane on form. Can't leave them at home.
Yeah. I mean, Watson still did. Jamie Lyle posted the stats, like 13 out of 13 tackles made, 3 tackles broken, 17 carries, 78 meters. A lot of people have this stat now, they're like, 0 penalties conceded. I'm like, I don't care. I don't know. Is that a good stat?
Yeah, I probably agree that there is some penalties that you're at fault for, but there is also quite a few, especially if you're not like a front row, where ultimately it's kind of, I guess, if you know, it's more, I guess it's more penalties conceded in it. Now I'm thinking about it, I guess outside of maybe just holding on the floor or being turned over, I guess penalties conceded is quite an important one.
Yeah, maybe for a seven who's competing at a lot of breakdowns, it does become an important stat. Although you could argue that if you've had a game of 0 penalties conceded, you haven't been applying enough pressure at the breakdown.
Agreed. I guess it depends on the penalties. So obviously in that Welsh game, Gary Graham conceded three penalties. None of them to do with...
Gary. So bleak.
Gary. I know.
That was so bleak.
What did you do to the Grand Slam, Gary?
Oh, no. Poor Gary.
I'm just looking at Haining's stats. He was 13 carries for 56 meters.
What?
Making Hamish Watson look like a joke with 18 carries for 24.
Yeah. And to be, he genuinely, like, he when he walked off the pitch, he genuinely looked like he'd been in Basra, like battle. He was broken. He'd given everything, which I love. You know, he was shipped in. You know, he obviously was going to be on the bench, but, you know, he was shipped in against, you know, Aldrete, who you could argue is, you know, one of, if not the best number eight in the world, and absolutely did him.
I just think there's something about Haining as well. He just kind of, he doesn't necessarily look like even a rugby player. He's quite lanky and he maybe has a bit of a gormless look about him. So when he pitches up, you're surprised by when he does these things that ultimately he obviously can do and is paid to do.
What I find amazing is, where do those performances come from? Because he doesn't play for Edinburgh. He very seldom plays club rugby. And then he's drafted in, and he's sort of these energy stores for international rugby. He just needs to recharge them every 6 months.
Well, it's always this, you know, you've always got to go back to the fact that in 2013, he started on the wing for Western Force against the Lions.
That's mad.
I know obviously we chat a bit about Richie Vernon, but, you know, wing to number eight, and to go from being a wing in Australia to being sort of a number eight against sort of France and Six Nations, a pretty unbelievable transition.
So the next player who will have played against and for the Lions is Nick Haining.
Nick Haining, the ultimate bolter. The thing is, Warren Gatland should be allowed one pick purely on narrative, and that is actually a great narrative pick.
That's true.
That's good enough for a full double-page spread in a Sunday newspaper.
Like, 100%.
If the PR department's picking one player, surely it's that.
I guess just sticking on the forwards for a second, you know, there's not many of those forwards who had a bad game on the weekend. I think Skinner was really, really strong. Grant Gilchrist in D was absolutely throwing himself about.
Agreed.
Thought he really, really, I was a bit worried, and I thought he really stepped up. And I think potentially clear that, you know, he does seem like he's, it's hard to judge from the outside, but it does maybe feel like he is the premier kind of line out operator in Scottish rugby. He just sort of comes across as very much like a leader. And then I know we sort of talked about it a bit in on WhatsApp, but Xander Fagerson just really sort of stepping up, having been out for a few weeks and having what I think is a performance that might put him into the Lions.
Yeah, and I think we'll come on to talk a little bit about the Lions. I had one question for you guys, and I think I'm playing the sort of the devil's advocate, and we've obviously, there's lots, after the Ireland game, there was a lot of talk of Tooney out again, Allen in. And obviously that's now dissipated after the fantastic result against France. Fair enough, all on board with that. But what have we learned about this Scotland team that I guess we didn't already know? You know, we were as inconsistent in this tournament as we have been throughout the whole of Tooney's, you know, reign, capable of phenomenal moments, but also, you know, hugely frustrating losses. You know, is it just the order of these results, is that covering up still quite a lot of frailties in this Scotland team? Or do you think we've actually moved on as a unit? Either one of you can come in on that.
I think that Ireland game still highlights a weakness in this Scotland team, which I don't know if it's necessarily Tooney. I think it's potentially, you know, just a little bit of the players that he has at his disposal, and that potentially the performances on the day. But, you know, ultimately, when Ireland got a grip of that game and the forward pack was really sort of asserting its control, Scotland looked a little bit, still looked bereft of ideas. And Finn starts to sort of panic a little bit. And I think it's, I know, I, again, we're sort of saying this in position when we did get back into the game and we were drawing with sort of 5 minutes to go. But against that team like Ireland, who have got someone at 10 who can kick the corners and it can really just kind of continuously apply that pressure, I think Scotland do still massively struggle.
Yeah, and I think that in that game in particular, the fact that Johnny Gray, who had such a good game against England and even Wales and has been playing so well for Exeter, could still be outshone by a James Ryan and an Ian Henderson, who a lot of people had probably been writing off in recent weeks. And the same about Sexton versus Russell. I think we're just great examples of that in action.
I can't decide if we're like too zeroed in on Scotland, and that's why I think sometimes we get quite negative about players, especially in the Lions, or whether, you know, that is actually just how it's going to be. And Gatland will ultimately pick Tagburn, Ian Henderson and James Ryan ahead of Johnny Gray. You know, ultimately we look at Johnny Gray and we focus on the fact that we don't, I know I do this. I'm now focusing on the fact that he had that bad game against, or not a bad game, but he was probably outplayed against Ireland.
Yeah.
And then when it comes to the Irish players, we don't consider the fact that they obviously lost the games preceding. James Ryan hadn't been on good form, etc. And it's, but again, it does feel, and again, whether this is true or not, that Ireland game is exactly the sort of game that Gatland's going to look at in terms of who he wants when facing up against South Africa.
Mm. But then at the same time, I think in some senses, the English and the French packs are quite similar to Ireland. Like they're big, they're physical, they place a lot of emphasis on the set piece, and ultimately Scotland, you know, I think against England dominated that pack and France got parity. And they're both, I think the slight thing I worry about is that the winning away from home narrative gets slightly weakened by the fact there haven't been crowds. And that might count against some of the players.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, I don't know, Wales and Ireland have both won away from home against Scotland, and I feel like that would probably count in their favour.
Yeah, it's certainly going to be a big consideration in that, you know, away from home narrative, I believe, is probably overblown, and it's something that Gatland said, like, was it 4 years ago? Probably more than 4 years ago now, but it's been that sort of one recurring thing that, you know, Scots like us cling on to. We talked an awful lot about the forward pack there, you know, through the tournament, particularly focusing on the France game. You know, one player whose stock has risen faster than GameStop or Dogecoin in the Six Nations is Chris Harris. And, you know, that performance he put in on Friday night up against Vakatawa, you know, completely silencing him and, you know, putting in a phenomenal defensive shift. You know, do you think Chris Harris is now won over all of the Scotland fans? And is it enough, you know, to perhaps nudge himself onto a Lions position, Matt?
I think he's definitely won over the vast majority of Scotland fans. And I think against Italy, obviously Hugh Jones had that start and showed what he was capable of, but it was only Italy and he wasn't tested at that level. And Harris, once again, against, you know, big physical opposition, against decent 13s, was pretty solid. Well, really solid in defence. And there's just something about him that I think seems to instill confidence in the rest of the team. And it's not just his sort of one-on-one tackling. His defensive reads of the situation, his ability to go soft, and also he's pretty good at the breakdown as well, I think, just probably saves Scotland or stops other teams from scoring points at big moments in the match. There was one moment against France where they had a sort of 3 or 4 man overlap that he sort of shepherded quite well towards the touchline and then gained the turnover that I think just kind of summed up his value to that team. And I almost think if you have a Scotland backline that has Doohan, Hogg and Finn, for instance, as your big attacking threats, then you can almost afford to have someone who maybe can't do what Hugh Jones can do, but offers you, you know, solidity and defence that's as good as anyone's.
It's the whole Dave Rennie argument. I know there was that piece where Hugh Jones was sort of asking why he wasn't in the team, and Dave Rennie was like, I've generally got enough superstars. I need people that are going to do the grunt work. Which, you know, similar thing. You've got George Horn, Finn, Hogg, Tommy Seymour. It's kind of like, I need a 13 that can just, like, do the basics and lead the defence. Although, and again, I agree, I think Harris has been really good. And, you know, I think ever since sort of autumn 2017, when he first came on the scene, we've not been fully sort of bowled over. But I think probably this Six Nations is the first time where we're probably all fully admitting that we're like, right, yeah, Harris is actually really good. And it's probably exactly what Scotland do need. I still think, and I'll get shouted down for days, but I still think there is a Hugh Jones-Harris combo in that centres that could work.
And people, that's the stuff we need to see on the summer tour this year. Just test it out in Romania.
Is that, or why didn't we try it against Italy? I appreciate, obviously, Sam Johnson, probably you want to keep giving him game time.
He was coming back from injury as well.
Yeah.
Would you rather have Jones or Redpath?
Well, that was what I was going to say. I feel like everyone's like, oh, Redpath is sort of the kind of new kid on the block, and he's literally had one game and then not been seen again, which obviously is really, really disappointing.
I believe he's back in non-contact training with Bath, so I expect that means he's sitting on a spin bike or doing some stretching.
Yeah,
he's on his way back to playing. I think one of those sort of, I think we had heard it, some sort of like nerve injury in his neck, which I guess is just one of those things that takes a really long time to heal, as opposed to, you know, like a muscle tear, which is just a little bit more predictable, perhaps.
The video that we sort of tweeted today, where Cam Redpath's chatting about that that near try for Doohan in the England game, I think the commentary, and to give it sort of a bit of context, it was the move in the Scotland England game where Scotland had a scrum on the England 5 meter line. And
England down to 14 men.
England down to 40 men. Price passed to Redpath. Redpath put it behind Harris to Finn, and Finn crossfield to Doohan, who nearly scored. And Redpath said that Finn, just before the play, was like, oh, if you want to kick it, no worries. Or if you're in, if you just kick it if it's on. And it's like, was there no set play? This is a scrum on the England five. What do you mean, just kick it if it's on? Like, I thought there'd be a...
but also, he in the way that Redpath got the ball and moved, it looked like the whole plan was that he was meant to take it to the line. And then Harris is coming in on that short dummy and he's putting it in behind.
Yeah, I wonder...
I'm not quite sure what... The only other kick option, I suppose, would be Redpath takes it to the line, Finn comes in round the back, and he puts a grubber into the dead ball zone for Harris.
Yeah. And I wonder whether what actually happened was the set move, but what Finn was saying was basically, if it's on for you to grubber through, back yourself.
Which I like. Like, that's that's what we, I think that's what rugby players should be able to do, right?
Yeah.
And clearly clearly Finn was like, you know what you're doing. You've got like good skills and good
insight into Finn's leadership style. Just like, yeah, crack on. Look,
he's trusting him. He's giving him responsibility.
Yeah, on his first cap.
Yeah.
Redpath looked up and he was like, absolutely no fucking way, and just passed it back. He's like, we will do this. Which it was the right decision, right? Because Doohan was if that was executed well, Doohan was in the corner.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, ultimately, you know, there probably hasn't been as sort of, you know, probably since Hogg in, what, 20, when was he, 2010 or 2011?
2012.
2012. You know, Hogg's debut off the bench for Wales, where he came on and was pretty unbelievable. I don't think there's been a debut since like that since then. And, you know, I think ultimately if you can kind of, at 21, away at Twickenham, appreciate there's no fans, deliver that sort of performance from 12, you know, he's clearly going to be plus 60, 70, 80 caps and probably in at that 12 position for a long period of time.
One of two breakthrough debuts that day, with big Dave Cherry also breaking onto the scene. three tries to the good in his international career now.
From one star and three sub appearances. So he's not actually, I think he's got a better record than one try every 80. He's around about one try every 80 minutes because he's not had them all off from starting.
And his try against the critical try he scored against France, where the ball sort of bobbled around and bounced off Xander Fagerson's back, the pickup he makes and the reaction to catch that ball is actually unbelievable.
That's
if you
like
watch
proper,
it back at real pace, it's insane how he picks that ball up.
That's like slip catching reactions. It's nuts. Like, it's falling towards, pretty much picks it up at his knees. And then I think the French players are like, you definitely knocked that on. And they kind of stop.
I mean, when I was watching it, I was like, there's no, they fucked that. That is definitely a knock on.
But I mean, I think it was an interesting game in some senses that I think Doohan's first try wasn't a try. I think it was just a double movement. And then I think Finn's red was probably quite harsh. So I don't know if we were like due a bit of luck after the tournament, like after Ferguson's red card and things like that.
Yeah. I do think, like, I don't know about Finn's red. I never like to get too much into the details
of head knocks
and things like that. But it certainly looks that even the angle which Wayne Barnes was showing on screen, not the one that has sort of been flying around on social media, the first contact is at shoulder rather than at neck. And then he falls, Brice Doulin falls back, and that's when it goes up. But
I think I think it was the perfect example of making the case for a orange card type thing, where I think in 9 times out of 10, Finn getting the ball at 10 that close to the ruck, he has someone like Aldrete or Olivon in front of him, and he knows that if he takes it to the line, he's getting hit by a big lad, and he's bracing himself, and that elbow or forearm is hitting the guy nowhere higher than the chest. It was just unfortunate that it was Brees Doolan, who is a small guy. So it happens that, you know, the image that the TMO was given was it was the throw, even though, as you say, I kind of thought it was first with the shoulder and then a little bit in the throat.
Yeah. No, I think you're pretty right in the sense, you know, ultimately, as you when you're playing rugby, you know, a lot of the time so much stuff is just instinctive, and ultimately he's got the ball looked up and someone is right in his face and he's just put out a hand to stop them. And there's no intent around hitting them in the neck or the face, but ultimately just a mix of Doolan was slightly closer than he had anticipated. Doolan was upright and Doolan is a small guy leads to a red card. And I appreciate that the whole point is you're trying to change these behaviours, but ultimately, you know, handing off is a pretty standard part of rugby still. So,
that's the thing. Like, I would argue that a firm handoff, if you really connect with someone to the face, is far more dangerous than that. For instance,
100%. Pam, Jonathan Davis, Pam to the face. It's definitely way more dangerous than that.
There's like the force equivalent of, you know, 100 kilograms plus coming through straight to your face.
No, agreed. But alas, anyway, to be honest, it would have been a yellow card probably no matter what.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It would have been the last 10 minutes. So, and we won. So no one gets.
And he's out. And now Finn's out for the Edinburgh game at the weekend. So
yeah.
Funny thing. Edinburgh clearly going to march.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
March on through Racing 92.
Funny thing, just to note, just back to the Dave Cherry point. Dave Cherry's now scored the same amount of tries for Scotland as he has for Edinburgh.
Yes, Chezza. I love the Dave Cherry story.
It is great. Another thing I realized today, Dave Cherry obviously came from Stade Niçois, which we've talked about a lot.
Yeah.
And one of the women's assistant coaches is former Glasgow player Tyrone Holmes, who cut his teeth coaching in the south of France at Stade Niçois.
Oh.
Stade Niçois.
It's actually a conveyor belt. That's the thing we didn't realize.
Well, if you listen,
it's like Scottish rugby's version of like that famous Barcelona academy that just like keeps reeling off like Messi's.
Well, if you listen to the latest Glasgow Warriors podcast, they interview Hamish Bain, who I think was out there with Dave Cherry.
Yeah.
And he talks about how like four of them went out and they only trained like two or three times a week, and they started having to like organize their own training because the coaches were like, "Nah, man, you don't need to train anymore." And they were like, we're really like still full of energy, like we're not tired, so we're probably just going to do the training. So not only that, they also didn't have a gym. And then what genuinely they say in the podcast is Chris Leck, who was like the strength and fitness coach, then flew out to the south of France, not only to give the Scottish guys like their own strength and conditioning training, but on the podcast he says that Chris Leck then did a presentation to the Stade Niçois coaching team to take them through why additional strength and conditioning was important to team success. And like showing that, it sounded like he's like showing them graphs. He's like, you do this amount of weight training equals improvement in performance. And the French guys were like, no fucking way. This guy's onto something.
I've got so many questions about the SRU due diligence process before sending this money to Stade Niçoise.
I know.
Honestly, the hell happened?
To be fair, I don't know whether like they wanted this sort of stuff to come out. The guy who's like doing the Warriors Weekly was like,
Yeah, I couldn't believe how open he was. You'd think he would, given how much the SRU love to control this kind of thing, be like, oh, it's done so much for my development, etc.
Hamish Bain's contract's about to be, he just signed a new one, it's about to be cancelled.
I was just checking, speaking of Finn, you know who the reserve fly half is at Racing?
Tran Duke?
Yeah, Tran Duke. So that's good. That's good news.
Yeah, no. Well, I mean, do we want to go into Edinburgh? Do we still...
I was gonna talk, we've kind of talked around the subject, but what has, you know, that Scotland campaign done for Scottish players' Lions potentials? You know, I think, is it fair to say, as an article in the Telegraph today did, that Stuart Hogg and Finn Russell, for example, Alan, are on the plane?
I think the only person, maybe now it's changed to two, the only two people in the Scotland squad that can be guaranteed of a place, I was going to say Hogg and Watson. I still don't think that Watson is 100% guaranteed. Hogg guaranteed, no matter what. But the issue with Watson is they're going for this thinner squad, the slightly thinner squad, and he doesn't have that much versatility. I think Tom Curry is guaranteed to go, no matter what. I think he's ahead of Watson. Just given performances over the last sort of 2 years, I appreciate obviously during the Six, but even during the Six Nations, Curry's been pretty unbelievable. And so then that kind of leads you a little bit down the route of it's Watson v Tipperick. Now, I think Watson is a much better player than Tipperick, and I think Tipperick struggled a little bit, especially at that Lions level, both in New Zealand and Australia. But Gatland does like him. And I think people will, you know, Watson, I don't know whether that size thing is an issue for Watson.
I think after this Six Nations, and it's not just this Six Nations, right? He's been excellent for a number of years now. I think this Six Nations has secured his spot on the plane in a way that I still, that's different from Finn, for instance, where I could still see Finn not going at the expense of Farrell, Sexton, even bigger.
No, I agreed, and I think the match against France, well, Finn had a pretty good performance, and I think that will play to his chances quite well. It's interesting. I think all the fly halves, you know, Farrell's probably been the weakest of the four, but I'd say all of them have had strong games and weak games. And again, maybe this is us a little bit focusing on Finn's weak games and focusing too much on Sexton's strong games. Although, to be fair to them, he was, especially against sort of Scotland and England, he was fairly class. I think Finn will go in the end, though, especially if Racing make a big push in sort of the Champions Cup.
Maybe as well he benefits from, I think that Sexton, Farrell and Bigger are all pretty similar players. Yeah. So does it make that big a difference if you pick two out of those three rather than all three of them? Probably not. I think the guy who has potentially or really like pushed his case is Doohan. I think that you just look at his stats and just the nature of the kind of player that he is. He does something that is, there's a lot of very good wingers in the Six Nations, but I think that you could argue that May, Adams, even Reece Zammert and Anthony Watson are all quite similar players. And I think Doohan, particularly against England and France, when he was used as like an auxiliary back row forward, just shows that he offers something a bit different.
No, I agree that I think Doohan brings And I think he brings something to that team that Gatland has historically quite enjoyed as well. It's like a big strike runner that can come off sort of 10 or 12. And I know we don't want to go into this sort of conversation, but there is just something a bit strange about Doohan competing for the Lions against South Africa.
CJ Stander, right? And I think he's pretty much guaranteed.
Rules are the rules, aren't they?
Yeah, rules are the rules. I was just
looking through, I guess, if we consider that Finn and Hoggy and maybe Doohan and Watson are sort of very close, if not sort of on, I guess, peripheries. Guys like Rory Sutherland, he had a very, very strong tournament. Obviously picked up a bit of an injury in the last game. We don't know how serious that is, but knowing how much we do know about props, do you think Rory Sutherland's got a good chance of going?
To be honest, I don't really know. It feels like a lot with these props that there's a lot of players that are all on a sort of similar level, and they've all got their own sort of separate issues, whether it's Mako in the scrum or potentially Sutherland maybe not bringing as much around the park during the Six Nations as he did the last Six Nations.
Well, props that do make an awful lot around the park. You talked about Xander. He's put himself into the conversation, would you say?
I think so. I think he had a very good game against France. He was very good against England as well. I think France was an interesting one because the scrum seemed to go both ways, but it does feel like he kind of solved quite a few problems on the fly and started earning penalty for Scotland versus maybe at the start it was going the way of the French. And I just think he's the kind of guy that you could put into a Lions team and he would do really well. Like, he does all the basics well. He's no nonsense. He's got a really good engine. I think that Furlong is the guy that's in the driving seat.
Yeah.
But, and Sinclair is obviously a really good player. But I feel as if Ferguson on form is playing better than him at the moment. And I think, yeah, maybe
the Telegraph
Sinclair
analysis this morning was that it's Ferguson and Thomas Francis are probably in a straight shootout for the third tight head spot behind Furlong and Sinclair.
Mm. Yeah, and look, we're not, as you said before, we're not prop experts, but Francis does seem to be really highly valued by subsequent coaches now under Wales, by Gatland and Pilak. Yeah. And I think he is solid at the scrum, and actually, I think like his rucking stats in the Six Nations are actually like really impressive for a guy who looks like a bit of a joke physically.
The other one,
say it to his face.
No chance.
We talked about it a little bit. It's obviously Fraser Brown and Rambo.
Yeah.
I think you look back to 6 months ago and I think, you know, a conversation about hookers, they would have been, both of those guys would have been in people's sort of top five, top six options for the Lions. And obviously they've been injured. Ken Owens has played well, but ultimately the rest, Jamie George, Cohen Dickey, Herring, Kellyer, none of them have played that well. But just because Brown and Rambo haven't been in the tournament, they've sort of seemed to have dropped out of the conversation quite a bit, even though Brown's back, played really well at the weekend.
Yeah, it is a difficult one because I think if either of Brown or McInally had played in that Scotland team, you know, it wouldn't have made much of a difference to how well they did, I don't think. I've still got a sneaking suspicion that Fraser Brown could make a bit of a push. I think he seems like the kind of player that Gatlin would like. And I think that, as you say, Ken Owens is in that pole position. I think Jamie George has got enough credit in the bank to definitely go. But I actually don't rate Cowan Dickey that highly. I think that Fraser Brown is a better player than him. But I don't think many of these marginal calls are going to go the way of Scotland, unfortunately.
I think the difficulty is with a guy like Cowan Dickey, he's probably going to go pretty deep into the Heineken Cup, probably play a Premiership final or at least Premiership semis. Fraser Brown's probably going to get knocked out of the Challenge Cup against Montpellier on Friday night. You know, it's an opportunity game, particularly if he's coming back from that injury. I think I thought it was really interesting what BT was saying on the pod last week about that, all of those things having to go right. You know, form, opportunity, injury, all sort of coalescing around about that sort of 6 month lead up to a Lions squad being picked. I just think it's sadly gone really badly against both Rambo and Fraser Brown. And I suppose, I mean, Johnny Gray probably not going.
Yeah. I think given the thinned out squad just adds the value of that, those players that can play second row and six. So that's you got a Toji and Tag Burn, but also Ian Henderson. So Courtney Laws, who potentially is going to be back for the Lions. And I think Gatlin knows pretty well.
I would be pissed off if Laws got selected ahead of Gray.
Yeah.
I think, although he's not as versatile, I think Gray has shown enough in the last like 2 years of both club and international rugby to show that he would merit a place ahead of him.
I think it's fair.
I've got like a, I don't know. I think Gray is so highly rated by a lot of people, and the fact that he's so highly rated by Exeter as well. It, you know, he doesn't have to be picked by Rob Baxter. Like, they've got a lot of very good second rows. I think that might count a lot in his favour.
Hopefully. I mean, you'd like to think that he's starting for his club. I appreciate that Exeter, a very good club.
Yeah, sure.
Ali Price is the one that's one that's actually been chatted about more in the last few days than I'd expected. And again, I guess, initially, I thought potentially he'd played himself out. Not because he'd played badly. He probably had moments of his consistency across the tournament was a little bit lacking. He had sort of kind of probably poor performance and poor execution. But again, when you look at what else is on offer, there's nothing that's dramatically better than Ali Price. That's for sure.
Yeah, that's the thing, that the scrum half conversation, it's just swung around so much. Like, you know, Connor Murray wasn't even in the conversation, I wouldn't say, at the start of the tournament. And now him and Sexton are maybe being penned into that starting 15.
It's just
I don't know. I worry that at key points in the tournament, he's made mistakes around like the basics of scrum half play that Gatlin would like to see, just particularly kicking. And it's not always been his fault, right? Like the charge down against Ireland was he didn't have the blockers in place, but it seems as if he was maybe like panicked into a few of those decisions and just didn't show that like cool head that Gatlin will want in, even in a midweek side.
And I think to your point earlier, you know, if Glasgow do get beaten by Montpellier this weekend, Price is going to have very little opportunity to sort of present his talents outside of the pack. Whereas, you know, someone like Conor Murray, obviously Munster got Toulouse in probably the biggest Champions Cup match this weekend. You know, everyone's going to be watching it. Again, Conor Murray has a good game.
Yeah,
that's just him getting the momentum off the back of that England game, and his name kind of jumps to the top of the list, right? Mm. So it's going to be difficult for a lot of these.
But then beyond that, like, who are the other names? Like, I don't feel as if any of the Welsh guys have like really nailed down. Oh, maybe Kieran Hardy will go. I don't know, but I would be disappointed if Ben Youngs went ahead of Price. Like, I would maybe get it because he's more experienced, but Ben Young's been playing badly for a long time.
Yeah.
I think. Even in that England team that got to the World Cup final, he was almost like the weakest link.
There's this the weird scenario where there is, you know, I could envisage a scenario where you had like three Irish nines the also scenario where potentially you could have three Welsh knights. You know, it's there really is a sort of big bulk of about eight or nine players who are all about the same level now. And probably no world class, like proper world class nine in the home nations.
Mike Phillips gets the call up to the Lions.
Laidlaw in from Japan.
Oh yeah.
He's still playing.
Danny Kerr is trying to start his own hype train on the BBC.
I was thinking that podcast. I actually think he's got an okay chance of going. Like, ridiculously.
He is playing really well.
Yeah. Anyway.
Sam Hidalgo-Klein.
How good would that be?
That'd be narrative right there.
He's in the Exeter Shags, though.
Yeah. He was last season sort of on the bench for Exeter, but he seems to have dropped down to, like, not even being on the bench for the main games and sort of starting of being on the bench for the Shags now.
Yeah, he was on the bench for the mat because he like made a turnover to like win.
Yeah, yeah.
Win the either the Champions Cup or the Premiership.
Yeah, it was Champions Cup.
And then he just sort of dropped off a little bit.
Well, there we go.
Well, there we go. I mean, I think we've talked mostly. I think Doohan, we think is pretty close. Chris Harris, you would love to see it. I suppose that 13 jersey is another interesting one with just like players.
But
he can money in the bank.
But then he's got the versatility of being able to play
like
pretty much across the whole back line. And, you know, I don't see him like realistically pushing for a test match spot, but like he seems like quite a kind of Gatlin type player in a way, obviously, that Hugh Jones would probably never be.
No, I think Harris has a chance. It's again, he might have an issue with just the fact that he's in a really struggling Gloucester side as well.
Yeah,
and just not have those big moments.
I guess
there was a bit
of
chat about Cam Redpath.
No way,
Cam Redpath getting picked up,
mate. How good would that be?
That would be amazing.
but it's interesting because I think the 12 spot, apart from I think although Henshaw I think is a very limited player, he is an effective player. He's a nailed on tourist, I think. But beyond
after
that
tournament, yeah.
Like I think it's quite an open field actually.
Yeah. I was just gonna say on that 13 jersey and talking about Harris's versatility, but you know, Slade's got an awful lot of versatility. George North, you could probably chuck in there as a versatile option as well. So he's not the only person, I suppose, that's probably in that conversation that can offer, multi positions. But
I did see the argument that Hugh Jones, the fact that he's played in South Africa, lived in South Africa, potentially a little bit less useful that they're going to be in sort of a bubble. But could he on the hard pitches of Joburg get a look in?
Just love that. When Hugh Jones was like 21 as a student in South Africa, like cutting around in Cape Town, that somehow has given him like this amazing like knowledge of what it's like playing on the high veld. I don't really buy it.
Do you not think like De Allende, who probably came across him at the same time as the Stormers, is like, this guy's a joke. Like I will run through this guy. He like has never tackled in his life.
I don't think De Allende be like, he's a joke. He's probably like, you know, we're pretty good mates, but I could probably beat him one-on-one most of the time.
Yes, sorry. Not that he's a joke. Yes.
Well, I think we've covered an awful lot of Lions there, and it is going to be a conversation that is going to be happening pretty much non-stop for the next 6 weeks until Warren Gatland names his team. So we will leave it there on Scotland and the Lions. Should we look ahead very quickly to the European games coming up this weekend? We talked about it very briefly there. Edinburgh against Racing 92. Racing shorn of Finn Russell. But, Alan, can you see a way in which Edinburgh win this game? Let's start on a nice positive.
So I initially said no, and I still think that the chances are incredibly low. But in terms of having a pack that should be able to compete at that level, you know, Edinburgh do have the men that the vast majority of the pack are Scottish internationals, and they are a team that have gone to Toulon, for example, and won away. You know, that starting pack at the weekend will, you know, potentially be Schumann, Cherry, Nell Bergen, then you've got Toulis and Gilchrist, and then Richie Watson Matter with maybe Haining, people like Haining on the bench, like that.
Hey, Haining back to not play club rugby.
Yeah.
Like, look, I'm done.
You know, and I appreciate, you know, in the back line, there's going to be limitations, you know, Van der Vault, but they're going to have Doohan and Darcy back in, probably with Dean and Bennett in the centres. Look, I don't think Edinburgh are going to win the match, but I don't think it's impossible. And, you know, ultimately, with that Edinburgh team, the fact that they've missed out on Champions Cup, they've been getting a bit of a pasting in the press. Could they, backs against the wall, with all the internationals back in, I think they could put in a really good performance, and I don't think it's going to be a complete whitewash.
So would you say, in answer to the question, could Edinburgh win, would your answer be potentially?
They will potentially, almost certainly not win.
Well, there you go. Matt, are you on board the potentially train?
Wait, sorry, potentially, almost certainly not win. I don't think that's really an answer in the end, actually. I think you might get pelters for that. I think that, unfortunately, Edinburgh are on a bit of a different track to when they did beat Toulon that year, almost beat Montpellier away right at the start, and then beat Montpellier at home and had that really great run. I just think it's... Look, they have the ability, the players, to pull out a great performance, but the season's just been so disjointed, and those internationals are coming into a team who have been losing a lot of games. You know, not the vibe's not the greatest. It doesn't seem. But then, you know, Rassing without Finn, I think obviously Tran Duke has been a very good player in the past, but he is getting on a bit, and it does seem as if for Rassing to fire properly, where they would tear apart Edinburgh at home, Finn is a really key part of that. So I wouldn't completely write them off, but I'm not, you know, holding my breath over it.
Spread is 14 points. It was actually lower than I thought it would be.
Yeah.
Edinburgh to beat the spread. Is that Alan's outside bet?
I'm not giving any more bets anymore. I am funneling cash every week.
What was your bet for France, or your prediction for the France game?
My prediction was over 60 points, and for France to win by around 10.
Mate.
Yeah, it's been tough, mate.
BT got it spot on. He was Scotland by 4, wasn't he? That bastard.
Do you hear his commentary? His commentary was very good overall on the ITV. And then he did this, like, when Finn Russell got sent off, it was a proper, like, gasp, where he was like, I can't believe this is happening. And then when Doohan got the ball right at the end, he was absolutely loving it. It was really, really good, actually.
He's in the background behind that Irish bloke.
The
commentary.
The Irish lad was loving it as well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that after 80-minute section was madness. Like, when Dylan...
Should we shout out for Ryan Wilson on his 50th?
Oh, we should. I mean, fair play to him. Oh. Did you see on his Instagram the morning after? He looked absolutely fucked.
Well, he was saying that I think they'd stayed up until 7 a.m. The next morning, wherever they were, hopefully it kind of fins flat, and that Townsend had gone to bed at like 6 or something. I was like, bloody fair play.
I think it was, I don't know if it was in, I read a piece by one of the Scottish rugby hacks, I can't remember who it was, but they said that Townsend looked very dusty when he tipped up for the press conference in the morning, and he had said, I made the mistake of trying to keep up with Ryan Wilson. Which I thought was good. You know, we've come a long way since Two Beer Gate, that Tooney's just out on the smash and making light of it in the press.
I mean, and we were talking about this before. I put it out on Twitter, because of a question asked by my father-in-law, who I thought I'd give a wee shout out to. The last time that we had beaten France and England away in the same, like, five or six nations tournament, which was 1926. That is mad. Like, that's an occasion to celebrate.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
We got very, very sidetracked from Edinburgh and Racing 92 there, quite rightly so. But Glasgow, as we've touched on there, also playing in European rugby action this weekend. Montpellier, who are sort of swilling around the bottom of the top 14. Matt, they've still got a pretty handy squad, though. But Glasgow, all of their internationals back, perhaps with a few players, you know, playing to put themselves in the lines window. Can you see them doing a job in Montpellier?
Yeah, Montpellier have been struggling this year, but then they did just beat Toulouse away from home last weekend. So
good.
They're coming off a bit of the high. You know, my only worry is that Glasgow, historically over the last, like, you know, 4 or 5 years, even under Dave Rennie, against teams that can physically dominate them, like a Saracens, for instance, in the pack, haven't done so well. And yeah, Montpellier aren't playing well, but they seem to have the kind of team that could do a number on a lot of other guys physically. So yeah, they're not playing well. Maybe got some guys like the Duplessis brothers who are a bit over the hill, but they could still do a job in Glasgow. But, you know, it does seem as if there's an increasingly positive vibe at Glasgow with some of the youngsters coming through, some decent results. And then you add to that the returning internationals. Like, as you say, with a bit of Lions motivation, why not?
Yeah, that backline mix of internationals and youngsters is pretty bang. So Pricer Horn and then Hastings, Johnson, Hugh Jones, and then we've got Ruthven McLean and people like Ollie Smith in the back three. It's quite exciting. I guess, actually, you know, to be fair, do they keep Ross Thompson at 10 and sling Hastings to fullback?
Yeah. I think Thompson, since that, where he made his debut against Edinburgh, where he maybe looked a bit sheepish in attack, like taking the ball a bit deep. Since then, like, his confidence obviously grown, and his ability to take the ball to the line is really impressive, actually. So with Johnson and Hugh Jones outside him and someone like Ali Price inside him, like, it would show kind of a willingness to take the game to Montpellier, which would be quite nice to see.
100%. Have you seen the photos of Sam Johnson's dyed his hair
peroxide
blonde, like Adam Hastings today? He looks absolutely terrible.
Nice.
He might have done that, like, on Saturday morning at, like, 4 a.m., I reckon. He's been like, oh, Hasto, I want to look like you. How do you get that look? He's like, I'll show you.
Well, that'll be a good one. Nice way to start the Easter weekend. Bit of Friday night European rugby, Glasgow versus Montpellier. And then just after you've had your sort of roast dinner on Sunday, Edinburgh against Racing 92. Not
what time are you having your roast dinner, mate? The game kicks off at 12:30.
I thought it was later.
Looks
like I'm having a roast dinner at 11 a.m.
But if you combine the roast dinner with Alan's, like, what, four cans before kickoff?
Four cans
and a glass of rouge. Like, that's actually, that works out quite well.
Yeah, actually, yeah. Bit roast of beef lamb with the red
and four cans of Tisky.
Four cans of Tisky because it's a European weekend, not tennis. Yeah,
exactly.
Well, we will be back next week to talk about all about that. Alan, I believe you have a little quiz.
Do we want
to
do
the
it?
Ultras who stayed with us throughout this whole episode.
We might as well do it now. I've been going for about 5 hours, so
yeah, that's fair.
Feel like we're on the Joe Rogan Experience. We're into, like, hour four. We're just, like, talking complete nonsense.
All right, I've got three.
You guys heard of CBD? Oh, cool.
The got three questions. First one, nice and easy. Both of you can give your answer. There has been one player in the Scotland team who has played all 400 minutes in the Six Nations this year. Who is that player? One. According to the Six Nations website, just to cover myself.
That's actually a better, you know, reference point than your usual quizzes, to be fair.
Yeah. Who have you both got? You going Stuart Hogg, Dave? Matt, who have you got?
I mean, excluding the 10 he spent in the bin, but...
Well, that makes it so he couldn't have played the 400 minutes.
Sorry, yeah. I just wondered if they didn't count because he wasn't substituted.
You could have asked the question pre-answer.
Yeah, I've made a fool of myself there, as ever. I'm not going for Hoggy then. I'm going to go for Hamish Watson. Fuck it.
Matt?
Yeah, that was my first instinct. I'll make it interesting. I'm going to go for Doohan.
So Hamish Watson has played 386 minutes out of 400. I think he got subbed in the Italy game, if I remember correctly. Obviously, Hogg had 10 minutes in the bin, and Doohan is the only player played all 400 minutes across the Six Nations, which is interesting. And I can tell you, I can actually tell you all the other players. So there is 8 other players in obviously in the 5 other teams, none from Italy, who have played 400 minutes, and that's Rhys Ammitt, Doolan, Curry, which is interesting, Tipperich as well, Itoje, Johnny May, Chris Olivon, and Charles Olivon, not Chris.
Chris Olivon.
Old Chris Olivon. And Hugo Keenan, which is kind of a random one.
That is a really random one.
Yeah. So there you go. All right, 1-0 to Matt. There have been 9 Scotsmen to score a try in this Six Nations. Who are they? Dave, you can go first.
Doohan van der Merwe.
Top try scorer with 5, Matt.
Hamish Watson.
Hamish Watson with 1 try.
Dave Cherry for the Lions with 3.
Correct. He's got 3.
Darcy Graham.
Darcy Graham has got 2. That's correct.
Hoggy
with 2.
Hugh Jones.
Jonesy with 2.
Steely
with 1.
Sam Johnson.
Sam Johnson with 1. We've got 1 left.
Oh, God.
And this is now just a free-for-all.
Forward or back?
Any guesses?
Forward or back?
Back. You'll pick it. Finn against Ireland.
Yeah, of course he did. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, well done.
Yeah.
1-1. Very happy with that. Or however many I got right. 5.
And then I've got a really weird niche one. So out of the Pro 14 head coaches.
What?
Who are the...
Excuse me? How did you get here?
I probably know the Scotland head coaches, and that is about it.
How many coaches have coached... I don't know why I'm asking this. It seemed really interesting at the time, but now it seems really sort of boring.
This is a test for who's still with us.
How many coaches outside of Edinburgh and Glasgow have coached in Scotland, and who are they? Current head coaches.
Head coaches.
Current head coaches at Pro 14 clubs. How many?
I've got one.
I've had a previous history of coaching at either Edinburgh, Glasgow or Scotland.
I've got one.
And who are they?
Yeah, I've got one.
Dean Ryan.
Well, I was kind of going to give you a bit of a second to kind of...
Dean Ryan's not the one I had though.
So I wanted you to kind of take maybe 20 seconds just to consider the question.
There's the Ulster guy.
Lads, this is a competition.
Yeah, I know, but
But my answer was Dean Ryan.
Yes, but the point was that I was asking you to sort of contemplate it. Note down three.
Oh, shit. Sorry. Okay.
Well, there's only three.
And now I've said there's three. Fuck.
No, you didn't tell us how many there were. So well, what the fuck?
Because that was part of the question.
This is a shambles.
Right. It's 1-1. I'll give you Dean Ryan and I'll give you the Ulster lad, Dan McFarlane. Who's the third one?
I would have got there in the end.
Has anyone got the third one for the win?
No.
Ex Edinburgh coach.
Michael Bradley, Zebre. Is he still there?
Michael Bradley
what?
At
He's
Zebre.
Still there.
Yeah,
he's been there for ages.
He's been given the 3-year run. They wanted to play out the full cycle to see if he could.
It's like, Michael, you finished 12th again. You finished 14th. Like, another 3 years.
Are Zebra better than Benetton this year?
Yeah, I think they are. Yeah. I think because Benetton have had a bit of a shocker. Interestingly, yes. as part of the research, Sean Everett, who is the Sharks coach, I did note that he went to Dundee High School. But he went to Dundee High School in the north of in Natal. so not Tayside. Different school.
That'd who be knew? Great contract knew? Mix up.
Yeah, I know.
Who knew exactly.
Dundee High? Yeah, I know.
You're off to Dundee.
There's that guy, Clark Laidlaw, who was or still is New Zealand Sevens head coach.
Yeah.
And is he Laidlaw's cousin?
I can't remember. Yes, cousin. Yeah.
I feel like NZ Sevens coach, that's like a nice life. There's less churn at Sevens. Like a lot of them seem to have like gigs for a long time.
Yeah.
And being New Zealand Sevens coach, just like the amount of
win. Yeah. It's like win record. It's like 95%. Oh, cool. You must be good. Like,
yeah. So. Nice.
Cool. Is that the quiz over?
Yeah, that is the quiz over. So
I think Matt won there in the end, probably with Michael Bradley the tiebreaker.
Maybe
potentially Matt definitely won.
Well, we'll take that.
How long do we go for there?
Huh?
How long do we go for there?
I don't know. Actually, the clock on Zoom isn't showing, so I'll know. We've been going for a wee while though, so I think we should end the episode and put everyone out of their misery. And remind them to follow us on social media at Thistle Rugby Pod on Twitter, Thistle_Rugby_Pod on Instagram, and sign up to our newsletter, Substack, Thistle Scottish Rugby Podcast, and we will be back to speak to you very soon. Thank you very much.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.